Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. And I have always wanted to use that as my introduction music.
Me too. And if you don't immediately recognize it, it's part of the score from the musical West Side Story. And this weekend, the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra will accompany the Academy Award-winning motion picture live on stage at the Marcus Center.
West Side Story's music was written by Leonard Bernstein and is syncopated, lush, and rhythmic. In addition to the regular percussion found in a symphony orchestra, the score requires a set of drums like you'd find in a jazz or rock and roll band.
And that's how the MSO's concertmaster Frank Allman found himself performing this weekend with his younger brother, Cliff, who's an accomplished professional drummer. They both joined me in the studio to talk about what it's like to play such an iconic and complex score to the film.
Well, in this case, it's really odd for us because the only time we ever play this music in orchestra pretty much is with the suite that Bernstein arranged. And we actually did this score once before with the film. It was years ago.
I think it was before I was here because I don't remember it.
It could be. I remember being very disoriented because, first of all, you're playing with a click track because it's all got to be absolutely synchronized. And secondly, that the tempi in the film were really different than what we were used to playing in the suite. So the suite is usually done as part of a concert program, obviously, and you can kind of do what you want with it, depending on who's conducting. And with the film, you're just locked in. You're strapped in and you're stuck with what's up there. So the tempi were sometimes much faster and less often slower than we were used to. There was also just the idea of playing along exactly with a click, which, I think is more common with drummers or other kinds of music. But yeah, that was the biggest thing, that the tempi were different and we had no wiggle room at all. But it was,
And it's longer because the symphonic dances are about 20 minutes.
Right, and this is something like 3 hours. So there's a slight difference.
Well, you're on the click track, yeah.
No, I mean, I don't think it's that long, but it's a substantial score. I think the first violin part's something like 88 pages or something. It's a real thing.
And Bernstein is not known for being an easy composer.
No, it's a really challenging score, I think, for everybody by design. You know, he was a fantastic composer and always wanted to be known almost exclusively as a composer, I think, was his big dream. And, wound up being known for practically everything. Great conductor, sort of Renaissance guy. But I don't think anybody could argue that this is really one of the masterpieces of the 20th century, especially when you fold in, it's almost impossible for us to imagine a project that involved Leonard Bernstein, Jerome Robbins, Shakespeare to a certain extent, and a very, very young Stephen Sondheim,
Well, it changed American musical theater.
Yeah, totally.
Completely.
Yeah.
It was one of those things, those confluence of people and events. And so, Cliff, for you, have you done this before? Have you performed this score at all?
I have not. This is my first time playing it. I've been in situations performing with orchestras before, but not along with a film that was, I've played on film scores with an orchestra there playing with the film. But playing a score, recreating a score that was cut with the film from this period, which I believe was, 1960?
Yeah, the film's from 1961. So the technology was really different. The click, it's not just having, it's not just having a click, it's that the click goes back and forth a little bit just because of the technology at the time.
Yeah, they weren't using metronomes for recording, I don't believe, at that time. From what I understand, they used to use for hit tunes, they would use a stopwatch and actually time it and make sure that they would do the math somehow. But when they recorded this film, I'm assuming they just were on a soundstage playing along with it and, tracking to what they were seeing. When you recreate it, because it wasn't locked to a metronome or a guide of some sort, which essentially creates a grid mathematically for people to follow, so the time is even or the time is this and that. In this case, it's a broader spectrum where there are a lot of pushes and pulls because nothing was recorded that way originally. So when you play along with it, you have to chase the click. The click is not there as a metronomic guide as much as it is for guiding you in and out of what the original orchestra did, right? So there are things that don't necessarily make sense mathematically. Like, I'm speaking as a drummer now because we tend to think in terms of a grid and like a very sort of fixed time concept. It just goes all over the place.
So in a way, it adds another layer of complexity to what you're already doing.
Yeah, it does. And also there's a, you know, because you're playing along with the actors' parts on stage or in the film, and it is like, I mean, I've done some Broadway stuff and it's kind of similar to that, except, you know, it's much more fixed to what's going on because this is all recorded. There's no flexibility in what you're playing with.
The other thing is that I found out later there were a lot of overdubs to the score.
Yeah, you can, if you listen to the actual score, because I actually downloaded the score and listened to it straight from the film, not the recording, because I wanted to hear all the little things in between and the fades and all that. And you can tell there are some pretty big cuts. You can hear significant differences in the way, like where the drums are panned or where something is, you know, off like in a split second. Like 1 minute, the drums will be over here and then there will be a cut and the next minute they're on the other side. So you can tell that someone did a significant edit in there somewhere.
And one other thing, you know, another layer of complexity for us as musicians is that there's this conductor.
Oh, him.
So it's this odd thing of having a click track in your ear as well as having a conductor who hopefully is on to the click track and knows the score better than you do. I'm confident that's the case here, although we haven't rehearsed it yet. But Bill Edens is fantastic, and I'm sure it'll be great. But, you know, if that gets off a little bit, then you make your choice.
Yeah, then you have a possible bloodbath.
Yeah, or just go with the drummer. That's
Then in that case, speaking of that, then the drummer ends up having to kind of be the bad guy because eventually you're going to have to get back to the click. And there are a lot of debatable concepts of that. But if you're playing with a pre-fixed piece of music that a click has been mapped around, ultimately, I mean, I don't want to say that's the, you know, I mean, I guess it is. It's the final, because I don't have a choice. The drummer, who is essentially the skeleton of depending on what style the piece we're playing is in, especially if it's something that's drum-driven,
This is in a lot of ways.
Aside from the rubato areas, you know, different areas where it's looser, but if you get off with the click, you're going to have to catch back up to it or you're going to be completely off with the film.
Generally, the drummers are the bad guy anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Volume-wise, click-wise, we're just not very looked on, you know.
No. So why the drums for you? I understand, you know, you had more of the classical training like Frank when you guys were growing up.
No, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I mean, our parents are classical people and they did their best to put me down that road. But I just
steer them away
from
it.
Yeah. I just never really felt it the same way. And I didn't really gravitate toward it the way I did toward drums. And I don't think that they expected that either.
But we also, I mean, they were younger too, and we were exposed to a lot of different kinds of music. I mean, they both were in the classical world to a certain extent, but we had a lot of stuff around the house growing up.
There's a lot of Beatles. A lot of Beatles.
I was going to say, I hope you didn't take your drumming from that.
I did, actually.
Did you really?
A lot of it. I have a lot of respect for them, and I didn't when I was going through my more snooty jazz phases, but now that I've kind of come back around, it's a whole different perception.
Pete Best is his hero. Oh, you mean the other drummer?
The other drummer.
The other guy.
Ringo?
The other guy.
Yeah, Ringo's
somebody.
The guy.
I can't remember his last name.
Yeah. See, he's not very famous, so it doesn't really matter anyway. Nobody will know.
Right.
So growing up and really getting into the drums, who were you listening to besides the Beatles?
When I started out, actually I should mention too that Frank had a garage band that he played drums in.
Did you really?
He doesn't tell anybody about that.
Probably poorly. But at least I had some exposure to it. And I think it was, especially when we wound up we were roommates in New York for a while, while I was, I think, just out of school and you were getting gone. But I think the way classical musicians think about time is really, really different than a drummer, basically. Drummers tend to think of time more in terms of the way that we think of something like intonation, or there's always dynamics. But the shadings of rhythm and time that go into jazz especially, or other kinds of music that drummers have to be a little more aware of, it's not just two and four like a Beethoven or Brahms symphony, or it gets sometimes a little more complex if, you know, you're talking about Stravinsky. But that's a difficult concept to get across to a lot of classical musicians. You know, you talk about being on the front end of the beat, you know, somebody
or behind
looking,
it,
or,
behind,
or a little bit behind, you know. Yeah. And they're like, what are you talking about? You know, it's either you're either ahead or you're behind. And it's not really the case. You know, you can create certain effects in classical music by slight pushes of momentum. And some performers are really known, or some soloists especially, are really known for that. Or the opposite, you know, being on the back end of the beat. Bernstein, for example, you know, these amazing recordings of the Brahms symphonies towards the end of his life with the Vienna Philharmonic, where all of a sudden there was this great sort of slowdown and expansiveness to those recordings when you compare them to what he was doing early in his career. They're amazing to listen to in a certain way, and certainly to compare. But for whatever reason, that's how he, you know, that's where he ended up with those pieces.
Do you think he was thinking more like a drummer would think in terms of time at that point?
I don't know. I think part of it was him just sort of wallowing in that sound, and yeah, maybe the way he had rethought the way that he would interpret those pieces, because he wasn't doing it with everything. It was just, it seemed to be that and Mahler, you know.
Just really opening it up. And
yeah. Kind of lingering to a fault to some people, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, people can say that's self-indulgent. You know, you're not serving the music. But I don't know. I mean, you either like it or you don't, I guess.
Yeah, I love those recordings.
Yeah. They're really rich. And to me, it's Bernstein being Bernstein, you know, in that big, lush, romantic heart of his, which I always think was at the core of everything he did.
Yeah, he was certainly, you know, an amazing guy on so many levels. And he didn't do anything halfway. That's for sure.
Yep. Nope. He did not. He lived a very big life, you know, which is terrific.
How old was he when he passed away?
80-something?
Something like that. It was 1982, right?
I think so.
82, 83.
It was early 80s,
Google
yeah.
That.
And, yeah, and I mean, when you think of what he went through in terms of how classical music changed and you know, how jazz changed during that time, too. He was listening to all of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, that was one of the things I always liked about him, is that he wasn't exclusively one genre of music. He was paying attention to what was going on in pop music and what was going on in jazz, what was going on in everything.
Politically?
Yep.
He gave, you know, that's what I mean by just sort of this Renaissance guy. It's hard to imagine a conductor or a music director right now who did anything close to what he did in terms of the scope of artistic activities and even cultural activities, you know.
So, Cliff, when you've been listening to this, and I realize you haven't gotten into rehearsal yet, but what do you think of the score?
Well, I mean, it's everything you guys are discussing. It's you know, I should say I was not completely familiar with the ins and outs of it. I did see it when you guys did it before. I happened to
We realized that after we were talking about Cliff coming to play. You happened to be visiting or something,
yeah, I was
right?
Visiting, and I just went to the performance, and I sat with Frank's kids and watched it, and it was the first time I saw the film. And I don't really remember walking away. I remember walking away from that thinking, like, that's really complicated. Like what they would have to do. And then him and I had spoken about it, and he said that, you know, we had to chase the click a lot and this and that. And then I started listening to it. I listened to over the last month or two, I've been listening to the original recording.
Month or two? Really? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, once they told me it was gonna happen, I started checking it out. Because
I should probably pick up my part then.
Frank's never heard it before.
What time is the rehearsal?
Yeah. Do you even know how to play the violin? I'm just checking.
That depends on who you talk to.
Yeah, that's debatable. But, you know, so I started checking, and then I got the score, maybe a month ago, a few weeks ago, and I was looking at it, and I noticed the first thing you noticed, if you've done any film recording or anything, when they release a soundtrack, that's of course not everything that was in the film, just the hits are in the film basically. So there's all these little, you know, play-ons and play-offs and things like that, and there's a lot of time signature stuff in this score. There's a lot of 6/8 things that I couldn't find where one was without a click. I couldn't hear the phrase listening to it because I didn't have a conductor telling me where it was. I was following a score, and then I would hear a hit or a passage, and then I'd hear where the time was and go back and try to, you know, get inside of it and see. Because for me, stuff like this, I try to train my ear as much as I can before I get into it so I don't have to worry about the score. Because essentially, if you're playing drums with an orchestra, eventually you're going to be looked to sort of lay the law down, especially in a click situation. Of course, the conductor has the final say in that, but you're trying to work with him. And if you're worried about reading every last little thing for the first time, there's three things there you have to worry about. So I try to alleviate one of those by learning as much as I can about it. And that's what I did. And the more I got inside of it, I mean, there's a lot of things that were going on at that time, like you were talking about. There are references to Latin music, mambo music, and there's some swing sections. There's
straight Broadway sections. Straight, I mean, there's Broadway stuff that's,
yeah,
just,
yeah,
like,
there's all,
if,
kinds of,
yeah,
stuff. There's a,
yeah,
lot of what we call boom chick. You know? And that moves around, you know, with the clicks. You know, because you're following a vocal that wasn't cut to a click. So now, if you did something like this now, or they recorded it now,
just
everything.
Just do it on
would,
a laptop.
Right. You, yeah, just put it in Logic and fix all of it.
Yeah. Everything would be tidied up.
Yeah. Sure.
Yes. Yeah. Well, in some ways, I think it's kind of fun that, maybe less so for you, but it's fun for us to kind of, you know, see how you negotiate that, because it feels more like, even though, yes, you're playing to the film, you're doing it kind of in real time. And
it's live.
It's live.
I mean, it's,
yeah,
just not canned.
That's what I mean by real time. Yeah, yeah, it's happening right now, right. And we feel that.
Yeah, I think this is a great example of the difference between listening to a recording and hearing a live performance is the ultimate example, really, when you see something like this with a film.
Have you guys done other films in this?
Oh, yeah. This is a great series, yeah.
We've done Harry Potter movies,
was
Star
that
Wars
clicked?
Movies. Some of it was, no. Yeah. Hmm. What else have we done? Raiders.
Yep.
We did Raiders.
Wow.
Yeah.
But those were all cut.
They were
more
all
recently.
Cut with a click. Probably, yeah. Yeah.
We did Godfather.
Oh, really?
I don't think had a click.
70s?
It did for part of
it.
Yeah,
might have.
Yeah.
I mean, they could always add a click to it later, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you're just using that as a different guide, but it's something.
Well, I know we're all really looking forward to it. It is one of my favorite scores of Broadway, but just of music in general. It's not just a Broadway score, as we've been saying. But Frank and Cliff, I want to thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Frank Almond is the concertmaster for the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra. His brother, Cliff Almond, is a professional drummer.
The Almond brothers, and yes, sorry, I couldn't resist, along with the rest of the MSO, will accompany the Academy Award-winning motion picture West Side Story live on stage at the Marcus Center Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon. You can find more information about tickets and times at wuwm.com.